Bonjour à toutes et tous, vous écoutez First Print, votre podcast comics préféré, pour une nouvelle émission du format Super Friends, qui est le podcast qui va à la rencontre des personnes qui font vivre la pop culture et la culture comics par leur travail. On va toujours à la rencontre des auteurs et des artistes pour mettre en avant la bande dessinée américaine ou non sur toutes ses formes et tous ses formats. Et c'est un petit peu la seconde partie de notre très longue interview qu'on avait pu faire il y a quelques temps avec Mattson Tomlin, le scénariste, co-scénariste de The Batman, qui a fait également Batman Imposter, mais surtout qui a fait en ce moment une bande dessinée qui s'appelle A Vicious Circle, qui vient de sortir en VF chez Urban Comics. C'était une bande dessinée, pour rappel, qui avait été annoncée en exclusivité hein, sur First Print il y a maintenant 2 ans, et qui est dessinée par Liber Mero, qu'on a aussi reçu pas mal de fois dans le podcast. Eh bien, on va leur mettre les petits plats dans les grands, puisqu'on reçoit à la fois Lee et Mattson dans ce podcast. Donc une fois le générique lancé, ce sera donc complètement en anglais, mais on sera avec l'auteur et l'artiste de cette bande dessinée, qu'on a hâte de vous faire découvrir en compagnie de son équipe créative. Merci. This was a really, really long introduction in French, but I'm so happy to have you here on our podcast. So, Lee Bermejo, you're back in our podcast. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, and it's always a pleasure to have you here in the podcast. Mattson, welcome back also, because we already did an interview before, but this time we're going to speak really about A Vicious Circle.
It's been so long.
Yeah, like 3 days. Don't mention it. I think you're quite a little bit tired, so I won't take too much of your time. But I think we already spoke a little bit about that like 2 years ago when you announced that you were working with Mattson Tomlin in this podcast. Can you tell us a little bit how you guys met?
Did I announce it in the podcast? Really?
Yeah, it was an exclusivity at that time. Okay. You weren't saying the title, but you were just saying like, I'm doing a creator owned with Mattson, and you didn't say it, but I was like so excited, but I just had to do the best poker face I could. So how did you guys meet? I think it was maybe just on Instagram or something.
Instagram,
like
it's a modern relationship for modern times. We Jim Lee posted something with Mattson tagged in
the screen test,
yes,
of Rob
of Robert Pattinson
in the bat suit, mm-hmm, all bathed in red light. It was the first still from that.
Yeah, and so I started following Mattson after that, and he posts to his stories still frames from movies, and he makes really specific decisions. Like he chooses kind of very interesting, not typical shots from movies. And so I really respond to that. And we started chit chatting on Instagram. And then that led to a Skype discussion where I asked if you were interested in writing comics or if you had any interest, and he said yes. And so we started talking after that.
Were you aware of Lee Bermejo's work before he contacted you on Instagram?
Of course, legend.
What did you like about his work, or what was the first of his comic
book? Don't put him on the spot.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that the first thing was probably Joker. I think, I know that there was a guy that I went to school with who in college who had some Joker art on his wall there. And I can remember reading that book in college and just thinking that it was such a cool, grimy, dangerous version of the Joker that just felt really cool. And Lee's work always feels dangerous to me. And kind of has a patina of filth and grime that makes it feel very real. I'd known about Lee for years and years and years, and was a big fan of his. So to have him reach out, and then to get on Skype and start hanging out, and like that was just, as a fan, just felt like a really kind of mind blowing big deal. And then it very quickly escalated into being really, really good friends.
And were you already searching for a new project as far as comic books are concerned, or did really the need to write something new come from Lee?
No, you know, it I'd always wanted to write comic books. Comics were my first love before movies. And when I first broke into Hollywood and started being a regularly working writer, anytime that I was at a, you know, a comic adjacent company, you know, I'd met at Boom a few times. There's a while where I was adapting James Tynan's book Mimetic into a movie. This was years and years ago. And I'd always say, hey, like, could I come in and pitch a comic? And I just never really got traction in doing that, but it was something that I really, really wanted to do. And then it kind of all happened at the same time, Batman the Imposter and A Vicious Circle. Because when Lee and I first had our first Skype, that was in January of 2020. And I had just met with Jim Lee in December of 2019 to talk about potentially doing a Batman book. So it all kind of happened at the same time and in kind of one moment for me with that.
Who came with the idea of the pitch first?
It was Mattson had, I think, two or three high concepts that he, you know, there was a few ideas that he had. And I just remember him saying, you know, something to the effect of like time traveling assassins that when they kill somebody, they're involuntarily shot through time. And it was just kind of like that sounds cool. Because I mean, I could already kind of, my brain just immediately started moving and thinking of possibilities. And I just thought there was something also really poetic about the fact that you have people who are killers who rip space-time apart when they do what, you know, essentially they're supposed to do. So I thought that was just a great, great high concept.
But how do you come from a great high concept to a scenario, a script for a three-part comic book? And was it always envisioned as a three-part story?
Yep. I think that for me, there's still... I'm so new to comics. And the version of comics that I could wrap my head around and feel like, okay, I actually know what this is this format. You know, it's the same format that Batman the Imposter has. It's three issues. They're around 50 pages. So that to me feels like movie sized in a way. It's structured in the same way, beginning, middle, end. And so there was never a version of it being five or six issues. There was never a version of it being one. There was never a version of it being ongoing. It was kind of always, let's have it be this contained story. And I think what was really important to both of us is that it would have a definitive ending.
And how did you create the main characters? I don't know if you had some inputs to Lee and he had to design the characters, or it just came to your mind?
Yeah, he came up with this idea that, you know, there's Sean Thacker, who's, you know, a black man who is, you know, Mattson said a few times that the idea, the conceit of a black man traveling through time creates, it's immediately...
dangerous.
It's immediately dangerous. There's more drama because, you know, certain time periods that wouldn't have been incredibly welcoming. So that we knew there would be these kind of two characters that would represent kind of the yin and yang of the story. And so we went from there. We had a few discussions, but really I think that the forte that Mattson brought to the script process was this really strong idea of there being this beginning, middle, and end, kind of the three act structure. So it made it seem perfect for three books because of that.
But you mentioned that being a black man can be dangerous for this character in function of the time period where he's in. So I guess you had to also choose the time periods you wanted to explore. And especially the ones in which being a black man can be more dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for us, there was definitely a level of, you know, in terms of the jumping through time stuff, it's all about contrast. It's all about making sure that you never want to jump from 1960 to 1965 because it's too similar. And so knowing that, you know, there's only one chance to do that first jump. There's only one chance to have it be, you know, that jump to Neo Tokyo. And so you want that to feel extreme. And for me, in thinking about how are we going to start this thing, it felt like setting it in present day would not be extreme enough because we have the internet and we have all sorts of different fashion and all sorts of, you know, I kind of wanted to tap into a certain kind of nostalgia. And so the reader is kind of dropped into, oh, you're looking at a time, and Lee made the very wise decision to render it in black and white and have it feel so photographic. And so like there's a kind of a nostalgia that we're instantly pinging into of, well, this isn't now. So there's kind of a fantasy of what the before was. And then to have that contrast of, and this isn't now either. It's the fantasy of the far, far future. And part of that is just training the reader in a very short amount of time, you know, in those first 15, 20 pages, these are the rules of the book and we're going to hold your hand and teach you how to read it because it's unconventional. Like no one has quite done this idea before. And so, you got to learn the rules.
And especially that playing with time is always like dangerous as writers are concerned, because if you stick, even if you have rules, it's quite easy to lose yourself a bit between those rules, because when you normally, if you kill someone, it has an effect on the whole timeline. And especially that, I mean, at the end of the book, your hero are in the age of dinosaurs. And I guess we have read Ray Bradbury. And if you just step on a butterfly at this time period, then you're going to mess with the whole future. But you don't seem to be too attached to very strict rules, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I think that neither one of us wanted to get that bogged down in time travel shit. It's not really the point. The point is so much more emotional. The point is so much more about the revenge and so much more about the quest that these characters are on. And so, especially for the first book, you know, I think that as we go on, a lot of those questions are going to be posited, and, you know, we'll get into more like what is the ramification of what we're doing, but certainly we didn't want to front load it.
Yeah. Lee, this is quite a spectacular performance that you're doing on this book. And I knew that it was off record at the time, but you told us that you were going to like change your style a lot. And I'm still wondering how you're doing it, from the black and white, very photographic, realistic style to the more like comic book style you're doing. So how did you approach that?
Yeah, it was just, it just seemed natural that if you're doing a book about time travel, you need a visual language that helps the reader understand the storytelling of it. So it's a shortcut in a way, you know, it makes it easier for the reader to have that really powerful reaction when you jump through time as well, almost like the characters are experiencing that kind of jolt of where am I now? So there was a narrative function that was really important. Like you know, it's not style for style's sake, which is always something that I feel very strongly about. But, you know, I started off being very cavalier about it, thinking that it was going to be, you know, I've used this example before. We were talking, some of the first conversations we had when we were talking about going to the Jurassic and drawing dinosaurs, and I remember telling Matt, saying, oh yeah, I'll just do it like Frank Frazetta. And you know, when I think back now, it's hilarious because I can't do that. You know, it was such a ridiculous thought, but the intention was good. It wasn't an arrogant intention. It was thinking about art styles that I love and finding a way to utilize some of them for the sequences. But then when it comes to actually doing it, I went through a freak out moment.
Okay. That was just a desk or closing.
At the end of the first issue, I went through a freak out moment because I had built up in my head this idea that it was almost going to be like different artists. Almost going to be like different artists doing the book. And I got so irritated by myself because in the end, it wasn't the extreme, you know, it wasn't as extreme as I thought it was going to be. And, but in the end it worked out better because it's also for the reader, it's a difference. It's, they change, but hopefully not so much that it throws them for a,
we can a still loop, see you know? Your lines, behind the changes of the style.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in terms of technique, how was it to work very, was it really different for you to work for example, in the different, in terms of, I don't know what tools you are using.
Biggest challenge I've ever had in a comic book in every way, this project. It's exactly what, when Mattson and I first started talking, I was like, I'm feeling a bit, you know, stationary, you know, I want something that gives me, that pushes me, that makes me evolve. And what Mattson delivered was kind of, you know, the ultimate version of that, because I've never done anything like as emotional as this book. I've never done anything that requires the most, as much research as this book requires. I've never pushed the style changes like this. I've never had to be exacting about a project as much as this, because they're like, the script is very, there's a rhythm of it that's very particular and very specific, and you can't fuck with that. Like, it has to be followed to a certain extent. Like, it needs to work the way the script works. So, yeah, a huge, huge challenge in every way.
What kind of researches did you have to make? Like, just in terms of time periods?
Well, Mattson did some too, because in the script he would include links, you know, to mm-hmm. certain things to give me an idea about possibilities and things, more specific images that would help.
Yeah, like in that first sequence in New Orleans in 1960, Sean goes to a bar and he makes a bet on like the political outcome of a vote that's about to take place. And that's a real vote. It was all about segregation in the South. And it's a real thing. And there were protests happening at the time. And I found these really great photographs of what those protests look like, and just like would hyperlink them into the script and say, this is what he's driving through. And then that gave Lee something real, something that was really concrete of, oh, this is what the people were like. This is what the buildings were like. This is kind of the vibe. And some of those photographs, I think also, yeah. It's fair to say,
yeah.
Influenced the feel of that first chapter. And so like when Sean drives through New Orleans, like there's a little girl who's, she's spitting or something.
It's a real thing. That's a real moment from time. So, I mean, I drew it based on the photograph, but that's something real that happened. So it has to add, going back to the realism of that first sequence, that's kind of what it needed, I felt like, to make people settle them in in a real way to that world.
And I guess for maybe for the other sequences, you didn't have to get so much like realistic researches, because for the like futuristic cyberpunk stuff, you just had influences from movies, video games,
yeah.
animation. But how much time does it take for each time sequences to get it right? And how do you know that you're getting it right?
I don't really know for sure, but it takes. So we started the book talking about it in that February or March of 2020. I started drawing pages in February of 2021.
Okay, so 1 year just pitching it or just doing?
Developing it. You know, he was working on a movie that he eventually wound up going to shoot, and other projects along with that. I was working on other things as well. And then we got to the point where we could start finally the book. So it's taken 3 years to get to this point, and I still have about 5 months left, 4 or 5 months left. So three and a half years to do 150 pages, more or less.
And still, like we spoke about how you put some links in the scripts, but in terms of writing, are these like really detailed scripts, or are you just letting putting the general line and you let Lee just do the whole pacing in terms of panels in how you the stuff is going to look on the page.
Page one, panel one, we're in total darkness. Page one, panel two, zooming out a little bit, we're seeing just a little glimmer of light. It looks like a sphere. What are we looking at? Page one, panel three, we see that we are zooming out of an eyeball. So on and so on and so on.
If you know the script by heart, we can just do it.
Yeah, we could perform it.
This is going to be an audiobook, actually.
It was a really good mix of like, it's a full script and it's a really good mix of the information that I need without being ultra specific. Like there's an understanding, I think, that like the script needs to be honored and respected the way it should be. Like I said, because there are certain things that I feel are kind of unmovable about and super important that the story reflects. And there's other places where you can add a panel, combine two panels. Like there's places like that, but it, for the most part, it's a kind of the perfect script in the sense that it's like, you know, in a sweet spot between too much or too little.
Yeah, for me, my goal when I'm writing is to give him all of the tools he could possibly want so that he never feels lost at sea. And so that means being very specific. That means that if there's a really emotional moment, I will describe in a way that I would not in a movie script, I will describe the expression that a character is making. I'll get into what they're thinking to just like try to give him all of it. But at the beginning of each script, I have a little paragraph that I put in the very first page that says, look, this is the script and this is the story. Should you see a better version, or if should you see something that's more exciting than what I've done, go do it, because it's going to be better than what the words on the page are. And ultimately, you're the one that has to stick the landing as far as the art is concerned. So I really don't ever see it as you have to stick to this and treat it like it's biblical. And instead, it's just this is just here to help you because you got a lot of work to do and it's Mount Everest.
Did you have like, I guess you did some exchanges about when you turn the page and if something wasn't right, maybe you had to redraw some stuff, or was it quite smooth in terms of a process?
There's definitely, with every project, there's things that need to be adjusted along the way. You know, like I forget, in this particular case, in the second book, there was some panels that I forgot. Thacker had torn his shirt in a certain way and I needed to adjust those panels. There's been other points in time where I redrew a face or had to, you know, like there has been those moments, but every project has that. You just massage it. You have to, you know, we have time, so we want to make sure it's as good as it can be. And sometimes that means stuff needs at the end of the book needs to just kind of be, you just sweeten it a little bit.
It really seems to me that A Vicious Circle has a similar cinematographic feel in terms of like the length of the panels. And because you also wrote a script for movies, was it an intention to have something that could feel like it could be also adapted to another media, although it would cost a lot to make an adaptation of this kind of book into a movie?
No, kind of the opposite. I think that it feels cinematic because it's a story that's epic in scope and scale and epic in the emotions that the characters go on. And so I take that as a high compliment. But at the same time, I'm not in comic books just to like farm IP and kind of create a development pipeline for myself. If a movie happens of this, okay, great. But the thing that I am most excited about for me personally is having a book that I'm extremely proud of with my name on it and now one of my closest friends' names on it, and being able to say this is the book and we did something really special that affected people. It's actually not about can we make a movie.
Yeah, it was amazing because right now you see a lot of books that you can tell they're pitch books. They're books that people do, and they're, you know, they're looking to get that made. I mean, I can remember some of the earliest conversations we had where it was just important for both of us that this live as a comic book, and also that we embrace kind of what comics are on this book, which is, you know, you can't do this in a movie. You can do it in another way, you know, with a style changes, but you know, this is comics. It's playing with the comic book medium. And so I thought it was so awesome that someone who comes from film, but has such a passion for comics, really embraced that. And it was all about seeing this live as a book and seeing, having this be what the comics medium does really well. And so, the comic first attitude was something that I really appreciated.
And it's also a really special book in terms of format, because even though it's like a 50 page issues, these are like larger and bigger pages than the traditional, even in the original format, because the French format is even bigger.
Even better.
And even better for you. But my question is, because it really resembles like what we have on the French market. So, was it intentionally supposed to be published in the United States, or was it something maybe you had envisioned for the European market first?
I have always loved the French BD format. Yeah. I've always loved it. And I follow French artists. I'm a huge Manuel Arsenault fan and Nicolas de Crécy. And I follow, you know, I follow stuff that happens here in the French market. But I just think that for my work and what I do, bigger does tend to be better. And so the BD format enables us to, I think when you see the pages here as compared to the US edition, you can just appreciate them more, that because, you know, there's a lot in the pages. So you can see the experience of the book, which is already kind of big and epic, feels bigger and more epic.
And even the, like in the US edition, it's not a chapter one on the cover, it's book one. So I think it stands out compared to the traditional single issue format. I guess it was also maybe for you a choice to stand out compared to all the single issues we have in the indie comic book field. It's quite hard nowadays to be seen in the creator-owned field. How did you approach that in terms of like I would say marketing, I guess.
Lee and I have now been in France for 9 days, and everywhere that we go, he's heard me say, I don't understand anything about the comic book business. And it's true. I have a fairly keen understanding of the film business at this point. I feel like I understand the chessboard. I know how to make some moves. I know how to get results. Comics, the business of comics, it is truly a mystery to me, and I'm trying to learn. Like, I'm here to learn. But for me, I did not sit down. We did not sit down and start going, oh, how do we market this book? Like
How do you publish it?
No,
because you could have also gone just for like wait another a little bit longer and just put out directly into a big graphic novel, for example. But you didn't go for that also.
Yeah. Again, it's kind of questions that are above my pay grade, because I'm kind of like you saying that, I'm like, could we have? Probably not. Like, I think that he needs to get paid to do some of this, because it takes years and years and years. So
sure.
Is that an option? Probably not. But I also, for me right now, I'm trying to understand how the business works. But what I keep on hearing over and over is, just do what you think is cool and what you're passionate about, and the rest will sort itself out. And that's certainly, like, for me at least, the fact that this book looks the way it does, is being received the way that it is all achieved blindly.
So, but still, so one of you had to contact Boom
We both did, and in fact, Mattson had a existing relationship with Boom before. I mean, I didn't know anybody over there. Well, I knew Sierra a little bit, but Mattson had been working with them on some film project stuff. And so...
So the memetic that you were saying
before? Yeah, I had adapted memetic, and that had been a long development process that, you know, went over 3 or 4 years. So I'd worked pretty closely with the guys on the film side on that. And then Berserker had not started for me yet, but had... They knew how obsessed I was with Keanu Reeves. Yeah,
because you're writing also the script of the adaptation.
I am. Yeah, I am. And so I had just been in their orbit so that it was very easy for me to call them and say, hey, Lee Bermejo and I are working on something together and we think that Boom might be it. So getting the meeting was easy, but as far as my role in that meeting, it was just kind of me being psyched to be there and going, no idea what's going on.
And you didn't have no input in the ways of the publishing was...
Oh, I definitely wanted the BD format. I wanted it to be hardcover, 3 hardcover books. That was kind of what we pitched it as. And because of the Black Label size, I think this is maybe the first or second book Boom has published at a different size. I think maybe Judas was the first one. I'm not sure. But... you know, they definitely were, you know, credit only credit can go to them for taking a risk on that size, because I know not everybody is crazy about it. But honestly, for me, this was the goal. The goal was this format, hardcover, this size, you know, which the American version is slightly smaller.
So is it not too frustrating to see that the American format was not maybe you intended it to be?
I hate to say this because it doesn't apply. I don't feel it applies to Boom, but I generally use this comparison. The American version is like the McDonald's version, and then the European version, generally the French version, it tends to be like the Michelin star version. You know, it's just... it's always like, I mean, I don't think you'd find a single US author who would argue with me about that. I mean, everybody knows that in Europe they do better editions than in the United States. So
so when are you going to work primarily for the European market?
I mean, I'd love to. We'll see. You know, it definitely is something I've always wanted to do.
And last question also, because the book 2 is out in the United States and we're waiting for it in France, but where is book 3 right now?
I am 26 pages into book 3. So I've got less than half to do now. It should be out sometime in the summer, I think, in the United States. Not sure when.
Okay, Zemra. And is it because the two first books were quite close in terms of their output, and we have to wait it a little bit longer? So is it hard to just balance the amount of work to try to have the most or maybe the less waiting between two books?
I try not to think about that too much because that's a boom, that's a Boom thing to worry about. Like what I try to focus on is, I'll use The Dark Knight Returns as an example. The last book of The Dark Knight Returns was like a year late. It was extremely late. Okay. In the US market, no one ever talks about that anymore. Everybody just talks about The Dark Knight because it exists now as a volume. And so eventually this is going to also exist as a volume, and no one will talk about the time in between issues or books or anything like that.
Yeah, you can be sure that if I was alive at that time, I would have asked the same question to Frank Miller, like, when is it going to be able for... It's not like I'm not like judging you or
telling you
it should be totally quicker.
Totally.
Is that like, it's also something to have in mind sometimes with the creative process, because it can harm a comic book series to have too much waiting. And sometimes readers, you know, we all forget, because there are so many new comic books every month that sometimes we tend to forget.
In Lee's defense, I feel like I have to jump in. Also, the jump in the States between the first and the second book was about 8 or 9 months. So they did not come out back to back, and the jump between the second and third book is going to be 9 or 10. And so on a cosmic scale, that's pretty much the same. That's the same thing. And the guy has just been working nonstop. You know, every, you know, we were walking today and somebody was asking him just, you know, oh, so do you take weekends? And the answer is no. Like the guy works 7 days a week on this book. It is hard work. He uses all the fingers, all the toes. It is as fast as you can muster. And sometimes, like, when you're doing work at the level that he is doing, like, it just takes some fucking time. Like, I would love to see anybody else achieve at his level and do it faster. It's like, and then if they do, congratulations.
Yeah,
we'll be.
Yeah. I would, my hat would totally go off to him.
Are you planning on working? I know that you still have to finish, but are you already thinking about working together again in the near future?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right. You won't announce it in the podcast this time, but maybe another.
It's in the works.
All right. Thank you guys for answering these questions. And I can't wait for seeing the book too in France, even if I have already read it.